the Pam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Derek Johnson. For the first time, you're a U.S. Army veteran turned life coach, and welcome to the Pam Electric Ghost podcast.
I appreciate you having me.
I want to let people know that we are going to be on a platform called Newsly. You can see that listening on Newsly there. We are a featured podcast on that platform. If you use coupon code GHOST to get 1 month free premium subscription, so you can stop scrolling, start listening. This podcast will be on Newsly later tonight, the audio version. And with that, I wanted to thank you for your service to the country. I think anybody that's been in the Army, everybody should be thankful for the service that you gave to your country. And maybe you want to start with what you're doing now, because you're an Army veteran turned life coach. And what we're going to talk about in this episode is how to flip pain into fuel. And maybe you can talk about maybe wherever you want to start with, like, your background in the Army and then how you got into life and to be a life coach. And it's your choice how you want to start that.
All right. I appreciate it. Once again, it's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Derek Johnson. I'm a U.S. Army veteran. My father was in the U.S. Army for 23 years, and my mother was always a kindergarten teacher. So my mother's German, my father's African-American. So I grew up in Germany as a child. So seeing that structure, that professionalism, I tell my friends that's where I got my borderline OCD from, is the German side. And then my father was in the Army, so I followed his footsteps in that. But I knew that I didn't want to do it for 20 plus. I knew that it would be a stepping stone to pay for certifications, college, and just get some good experience. And I just always wanted that challenge. So growing up, both parents were very strict and they were both very successful in what they did, even outside of their careers. But with their upbringing, they went through some very traumatic and dark things that they didn't necessarily get all the help that they needed. So I essentially became the verbal punching bag of the family, being the youngest, but I realized that that carved my mind into the man I am today, and it really helped with number one sports. Also in school, I was always chosen as the group leader, even though I was the quiet kid. I was the quiet kid who just was having crazy stuff happen every single night growing up. So I'd be the quiet kid in class, half asleep, but I would always be hyper aware of my surroundings because of the family upbringing. But I realized that I connected more with people in sports in the classroom because of that type of relationship with family. So I know a lot of the listeners could probably relate to that. If they went through different things, they relate to people more than others, because when you've been through hell, you connect with others and you can kind of see it in their eyes as well. So with that being said, that kind of paved my path to helping people. It started with sports. And then from there, I became a personal trainer at 16 years old. And then the older I got, I realized that I wanted to help people with their mentality as well. So once I was in college and in the military, I would see clients that I worked with from years ago, and they would lose all the progress that they made. But I wouldn't be annoyed with them. I'd be annoyed with myself, because I felt like I let them down. So I knew that I didn't make the mental shift for them. And that's what inspired me to get deeper into life coaching. Because I said, okay, I can help someone get in shape, have a better relationship with food, et cetera, but I wanted to make that shift. And that's why now my tagline is, I help people identify patterns that are no longer serving them so we can flip those so they can thrive. So that way they can attack all areas of life and feel like they're thriving and not just surviving. So in a nutshell, I was an athlete turned military, and now just coaching, helping other people to level up with their fitness, overall health, and also with their personal goals, so they no longer let their past control them.
Yeah, it seems like it's like when I've talked to a lot of people, some people forget, like, it's like mind, body, heart, soul, you know, it's like the whole experience. So it's like there's something, if you're having a problem, like with your mental, like, outlook, and if you don't take care of that, you're not going to have all the legs you need to win, because you mentally have to be fit. You have to kind of spiritually be fit. Your heart has to be into it. And then your body has to be there. So it's like, so when you teach people about training, do you have to kind of let people, remind people that you got to have like a balance in all those, all those aspects of your being a human being.
Oh yeah, 100%. So I like to focus on the full-fledged. So an example would be some athletes, they've always been gifted with athleticism, but then maybe they're lacking on their mentality or their self-talk. Maybe everyone looked up to them and saw them as this good athlete or this good performer, but maybe they didn't see themselves the way other people see them. So that'd be one example. On the flip side, it could be with somebody in their career. They crush it on paper in their career, they crush it financially, but maybe they neglected their health because they give all their energy to their career, to their business. So there's always one part that people usually neglect or need help working on. So that is the thing that we focus on first. And then we start to add just better things and more empowering things to their routine so they feel in more control of their mind and of their body. So nothing is necessarily drawing them back, or they're not their own biggest critic. Because with some people, they're doing well in all areas except for that inner voice. So we really like to emphasize on that. So to make sure that they aren't the one necessarily bullying themselves, I like to say, because of something from the past or some preconceived notion somebody else placed onto them. And they carry that into every business, into every relationship and friendship. So we just break any negative barriers so they can feel like they can breathe again. They're much looser, and then they're more confident to attack whatever they want to pursue in
So why do
life.
you think people struggle mentally so much nowadays? I think that what I've run into, like I'm in multiple legs. I'm a software designer, I'm a podcaster, I'm a musician, I'm an artist. So I kind of see things in multiple parts of my life, and I have seen there's like a lot of issues where people like are struggling with their a struggle mentality because they don't like have all those legs, or they don't know what to do, and they need to go to a life coach, or they need to get some kind of advice.
Yes. So one of the main things is because of our phones and social media, we have information overload. There's so much information coming at us at all times. Everything and everyone wants our attention. So sometimes all we see is extreme things. An example, this guy says, just eat liver. This guy says, go vegan. This person said, you need to take an ice bath every day. This person says, you have to neurohack. This person says, you need to get in a sauna 7 days a week. So, like, all those things could work to an extent, but everything is extreme now. So they're like, what do I do? Everybody's extreme on one thing and they push it hard. So people feel confused because of all this information. And then a lot of it contradicts itself. So then they feel kind of stuck. They're like, okay, what do I do for my body type or my situation? They're extreme with this, but what if I do still want to do that and that? Do I have to choose one? So I think number one is that there's information overload, so they don't know where to start. And then also the source of that information could just be pushing something to make profit, or maybe they do live that lifestyle. But either way, I just like to come with the approach into looking at somebody's life. So from the outside, people push products and services, which is fine if they're solving problems, but a lot of people and companies, they don't get to know the individual. Where they don't have just like, they act like they have a one size fits all technique or product or service. But I believe in the relationship, getting to know that person. What is their routine like? What was their upbringing? All the finer details, peel back the layers, and then you can really identify what they need. They don't necessarily just need a workout program or just the accountability. They might need something totally different once you start to learn more about them and just have a personal relationship. So I like to really focus on personal relationship. So going back to your question is that the information overload makes them feel like they have to jump from thing to thing. They tried this, 2 months later, they try that, and then they feel like they're running in circles and they haven't gotten the progress they want. And then they start to think it's them. Maybe I'm the problem. And then they start to doubt themselves, and then a cycle can begin, which just makes them feel down and they start to feel negative. But again, it's just so much information is at once. They don't know who to trust, what to do, what works for them. And they're just like, feeling overwhelmed. But that's definitely one of the big
Yeah, it's
things that I've
definitely,
seen.
I'm a child of the 70s. So, back then we had like four channels in the radio in our record player. So we had more time to focus. And I do see the difference with the young people today, because like I could listen to a whole album, you know, and then I hear people just jumping around a playlist. But they never really get to know
Yes.
Marvin Gaye. You know, they never really get to know Stevie Wonder because they just keep on jumping around. And so, like as a musician, it's a big problem because people don't actually listen to your
Oh, yeah.
deepest tracks, so they don't really know who you are. Right? They hear one thing, and then they're ready to jump to the next thing. So yeah, I see that lack of focus that it's across everything because like, you know,
Exactly.
that cell phone is pinging you and you get distracted by, you know, the latest TikTok or the latest reel or somebody's chatting you. Like, where's your focus? You know, we just used to get a phone call on a wired phone. Maybe. So it was like,
Oh yeah,
yeah.
exactly. If it was in the right line, I remember having to change the lines for effects, and I'd be on the internet, and my dad would kick me off because he's in the other room, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm trying to do some online gaming," and then he had to
Yeah.
send a fax
It's
out
not
to
the
somebody.
way
I'm
it
like,
is. You know, it's
"Oh
like,
man,
yeah. So
you
the
knocked me
focus,
off."
like, it's hard to get people to realize, like, that one size doesn't fit all. You know, we've got so many things out there, and people trying to kind of, you know, people are salesmen. There's a lot of people who are salespeople, and they like to pitch. And are you going to be like getting into a
Oh,
pitch? Or are you looking for something that actually fits who you are? So I think sometimes people have to get to the basics. Like, do you really know who you are before you go searching for somebody to help you? You kind of have to have an
Oh,
idea,
yes.
and maybe you need somebody that's actually going to help you figure out instead of just pitch one thing to you. Like, actually, you know, listen to you and actually, you know, get a customized solution, which sounds like that's where you're coming from, is the idea that, you know, one size doesn't fit all, and you do have to kind of have that relationship and figure out by listening to somebody what's going on.
Oh, yes. Exactly. One of the big things I notice in conversations, even if I don't necessarily work with the person one-on-one, we just peel back the layers with specific questions. Like, here's an example. Person one would normally say, "I just want to lose weight and feel healthier." And they haven't really thought much more to it. Person two is like, "I want to lose 40 pounds before this wedding because I'm tired of seeing these pictures at my grandma's house with me looking like that." So person two is way more specific. So if somebody is not very specific, I just try to peel back the layers. I'm like, "Why do you want to lose this weight? Or why do you want to work on your public speaking? Why do you want to be better at a presentation?" And then once you dive deeper, they get more comfortable. It's usually something from the past. Maybe they got bullied. Maybe they were always called the quote unquote fat kid. Or maybe they used to have a stuttering issue where nowadays in the professional field, they can't give a PowerPoint presentation without thinking of those times where they got embarrassed in school. So there's a lot of different things. And those are honestly my favorite things about humans is just learning about their story. And they can just see the blank face that I have because I'm just neutral. There's no judgment. I'm taking notes. And then from there, if I'm not the person for them, I'll guide them in the right direction. But if I do have the experience and expertise to help them with that, then I'll show them how that could look. But in general, the best thing about it is seeing when people start to have clarity, like, "Huh, I haven't thought about this in 10 years. I really do think that's why I do this, or that's why I react like this." So when they start to get some clarity, they start to see clear. And that right there is what a lot of people are missing, is just a sense of clarity. Because when we're not confused, we feel more in control and less stressed. Because right now there's so much confusion. This app wants your attention, the media, this influencer, grandma wants your attention, your dog, your kids, everybody wants your attention. So people have been starting to lose themselves because they're giving all of themselves to everyone else and they're neglecting themselves. And then when they do get some alone time, they just feel drained and they're like, "Man, it's been a couple of weeks or months since I've worked on my body or mind, but my people need me. So I need to go back to what I'm doing." And then they realize that they've been neglecting themselves for a while, and then they try to overshadow it with the vice. So it's a vicious cycle. But again, the best thing about it is once somebody can get some clarity and can be hyper specific about what they truly want, not just a broad statement, then they start to feel better even just saying it, opposed to just, "I want to speak better," or "I want to lose weight." There's always a bigger reason why.
Yeah, you can do that elevator pitch to advocate for yourself. Right? Some people are just like, I'm a software designer, and we've been
Oh, yes.
taught like, oh, if you get next to that director and you got to give that elevator pitch to like push your idea, because everybody's got ideas. It's like, so how do you represent? So you got to be able to like not bore them, but get the highlights and actually be able to connect and do it with that elevator pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And I same thing, like if you go to your doctor, like if you don't do an elevator pitch to advocate for yourself, if you just go on and on and don't put the points together in a way that's actually going to connect, then the doctor's probably going to miss what you're trying to say. So it's like learning how to advocate for yourself with this kind of like
Oh, yeah.
key points. Like, what are the 5 key points or the 10 key points that you can get to somebody so they understand what you're trying to say? A lot of people don't know how to do that because they've not been trained to do that.
Exactly. For sure. And that's one good thing about active listening. I'm a big component on active listening, like just outside of coaching, is just truly listening to somebody in public. So here's an example. If I'm at an airport, I'll have my headphones in. I feel like every single time a stranger comes up to me, "Hey, how you doing?" And next thing you know, they're just like pouring out to me for 20 minutes. And I'm like, "Hey, it was a pleasure to meet you. I got a flight soon," or wherever I'm at in public. I could be sitting at a coffee shop in the mall or wherever. But I've always felt that since high school, that would always happen. And I was the quiet kid, and I'm still like laid back and usually keep to myself, my girlfriend and my dog, like we're pretty laid back and everything. But in general, is I noticed that some people that have been through dark times and trauma, people approach them because they just sense, I guess, calm energy. And those moments right there, I feel are truly needed more than ever because we've been on the receiving end of it. An example could be if somebody goes to their local shopping center, Publix, Winn-Dixie, Groove & Newman, like whatever's close to them, if they're shopping and they're in a bad mood, maybe an old lady approached them and asked them about the pasta in their basket. Like, "Why did you get this?" "Oh, I remember my grandbabies used to make this." And they go on a story. And next thing you know, you walk back to your car, you're like, "Wow, I don't even know how she approached me. I just had a terrible day. But I needed that 2 minute interaction or that 10 minute conversation." So I've always liked being that person for somebody else because I knew what it felt like to not have anybody to truly care to listen because they're always like, "Hey, be quiet when you're a kid or a teenager. Shut up until somebody speaks to you. Don't speak until spoken to." And like all this stuff that goes on in people's minds, a lot of them, they carry that into their adulthood and they're like, "I'm trying to tell these people what's on my mind, but nobody really cares." Or they're just scrolling on their phone doing one of these numbers. "Oh, yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, keep going." Not even paying attention. And then the person just stops caring to even open up to anybody because they're like, "I have nobody's attention." So I challenge people to just be better at active listening,
I mean, you
just
go to a
truly just be
party,
present with that person.
even a house party, and everybody's on their phone. Where, like, in the 70s, you actually were talking, right? In the 70s and the 80s, like,
Oh,
there's no phone. Like, you actually had to talk to the girl or talk to
exactly.
the people at the party. Now people are like, oh, they're just on the phone. It's like, well, you're at the party. Are you on the phone or are you here? It's like the situational awareness, which you must
Oh, yeah.
understand because you're in the military. Like, where's the situational awareness for where you are and how you should be interacting with other human beings?
Exactly. For sure. And a lot of people, they won't admit it, but most of us, we're addicted to the phone. Doesn't mean it has to be in a negative way, but a lot of people I've noticed, they have a pattern. When they get nervous, they do a scrolling cycle. When they're in an elevator, they grab their phone, knowing they don't have service, but they just feel awkward. So that's like their go-to, "I feel uncomfortable. Let me grab this and act like I'm doing something or scroll so they don't look at me." I like the elevator analogy where I'll just ask a random question and I'll just make somebody laugh. I'm like, "Hey, did you fart in here? Like, did you smell that?" And then they're like, "What? No, it wasn't me." And I'm like, "No, I'm just kidding. What's your name? How are you doing?" And that'll just catch them off guard. I'll just say something random. And next thing you know, they're like out of their shell and their face is like, "Huh, I haven't had this kind of interaction in a while because I'm always stuck to my phone whenever I get nervous." So I challenge people to see, like, when you're in a social setting, unless it's like business related or somebody really needs you, can you be present and how long? Or are you just grabbing your phone because you're shy or you have social anxiety, which is a real thing, that are you just doing that pattern or are you actually checking notifications? The majority of the time, they're just fumbling, trying to release the uncomfortable feeling that they have inside.
Yeah, the social anxiety is really, really, you know, I see it with my daughter, you know, she's in, 20, 22, 23 years old. And a lot of the kids, they have a lot of anxiety. I mean, probably because of the pandemic. So they you know, these kids, like my daughter, and she grew up with 9/11, then the pandemic. So there's probably a lot to be anxious about as a kid. You know, they're growing up with like school shootings and stuff. So there's a lot of stress, right? And these kids are like, what the heck? You know, it's like, what's the next? You know, and so they've got a lot of anxiety, and then they are defaulting to the phones. To kind of not avoid having to deal, but you know, at some point, you do need to try to connect to be able to, you know, have a social contract with everybody, so that you can actually move forward. You can't be all these islands of independence. You know, people have to work in the community.
Oh yes, that's the only way things can work. You got to be cohesive. So something that I test people with, clients, friends, even strangers, is anytime you're out in public, give one person a compliment. And I don't mean hit on them, but just give them a compliment. Hey, nice shirt. Hey, why'd you choose that pasta over this? Just like start a conversation about anything and you'll be surprised how good you feel, how good they feel. And then yes, some scenarios, they'll just give you the finger because they don't want to talk, which, hey, it is what it is. But the majority of the time, they'll be okay to talk to you. Because you're just approaching them in a normal way. And a lot of people are missing that because we have been on the receiving end of that, where somebody spoke to us, we were not having a good day or a good moment. They made us smile, they made us laugh. And next thing we know, we're like, wow, I needed that little interaction. So if you can do that for others more, that social anxiety will start to get less and less because you're making this a normal to talk to strangers, which we grew up, don't speak to strangers. So nowadays, speak to the strangers, break the ice so you can have control of that social anxiety where you're no longer in that box or have that pressure. Like you're in the car about to go to that birthday dinner and they're like, I haven't talked to anybody verbally in 2 weeks. I've texted all these people. I message in the group chat, but I've never used my actual mouth to speak to these people in weeks. But I'm about to go into this birthday party where there's 30 people at this table. And they're like, we know each other, but we haven't verbalized. We haven't had a conversation on the phone or anything. And so when you really think about it, that's how a lot of friendships are nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once they go in, it takes them like 5 minutes to readjust. And the class clown or the class clown in that group, they have to crack one joke. Everybody relaxes and then they're themselves again. But it's
I can remember my pop, he was an insurance agent. Like, so he knew how to talk to people. He's a sales guy, you know, his whole career. And there's the ability to kind of cold call, talk to people out of nowhere, just be able to do it. It's kind of like, you know, like what the salespeople had to do. The person selling the encyclopedia, vacuum cleaner salesman, the insurance agent, they had to get outside of themselves and get that level of confidence to be able to do it. You know, if you're not in that kind of job, you don't have to. You know, the world has made it so you don't have to. But you really do need to make progress, you know, like we said, with like how are you going to show up with your friends if you don't have social skills, you know?
Exactly. But yeah, so doing that little trick in public and just speaking to people will benefit everyone. Even if they're not in sales, they'll just feel more comfortable at any given moment to be put on the spot.
It's definitely something that, you know, I remember like my pop wanted me to go into sales and I wasn't really into it because he was so like, you know, he was a communicator. He's able to be really good with people. And so I went into programming. Okay. But then what I did, I found this, you know, I got to be a musician. You have to be able to get on stage and play in front of people. That's a little different because you're on stage and the people are away from you. But this whole thing with the podcasting I started back, 2016, was the fact that I was able to communicate, you know, talking to different people around the world every night, you start getting a feel for just, you know, talking to your fellow person, you know, fellow human being. And, you know, whether they're, whatever country they're in, you know, everybody's got the same kind of mindset in terms of being a human being. You know, they want to be heard. They've got ideas. They want to relate. They want people to understand what they're trying to say. And I think that has helped me, you know, being the kind of person I was, a more of an introverted person. And now I'm out more out there because I actually am doing it. And so I think when you have to start with somewhere. And so I think when you get with somebody like yourself, people find out, like, I do want to be more fit. Or I do want to be able to public speak, and I don't know what to do. So then you need to find a coach that's going to fit what you want, right?
Yes. Exactly. And I'm really happy that this helped you, because you got out of your shell. Anytime somebody feels that, if they slowly start to work on that thing, they feel much better in every other area. Because I was the same way. I was a quiet kid. People that had me on Facebook that I went to middle school and high school with, they're just like, man, you can get on camera and just talk about whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I was always the quiet observer. I wasn't shy. I was just always watching the room. Mm-hmm. I was reading people, body language. But that comes from upbringing, crazy family, and alcoholism in the mm-hmm. family. Seeing wild stuff, you have to read the room really quick because you know pop off. So I think that that's a skill that people learn when they grow up in a wild family dynamic, that they can observe the room really well. They may not be scared or shy, but they're just quiet because they're reading everything and everyone.
It's a good skill to have, is like that listening skill, you know, to actually, you know, a lot of people stomp on each other today because they don't have the listening skills. You know, you run into people just trying to get the next word in.
Yes.
You know, it's like trying to win the conversation. And they didn't listen to the last couple of sentences. They're just trying to, you know, think about what they're going to say without actually listening to what the person just said. So what kind of conversation is that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's how a lot of conversations are. It's like the one-uppers. They either have to one-up them in a positive way, or what I hate is the one-uppers in a negative way. Oh yeah, well, I went through this. And they try to see who has the worst and most negative situation. It's like, what are we doing right now? Are we trying to get a trophy to see who can mm-hmm. say the most negative thing?
Yeah.
Like, it's so backwards, but you can zoom out and just let people see that. You're like, hey, have you noticed you're the one-upper and you always try to make your situation seem way worse than others? And I've just always been that friend and that coach that's just black and white with people. I'm like, hey, this all comes from a space of me wanting you to win, but have you noticed you do X, Y, Z? Just curious. And once they look out, they're like, wow, thanks for saying that. Nobody really has told me that, or I didn't notice. So just being honest and open and blunt with people can really help if you're coming from a good place.
Yeah. I think you have to kind of look at it. You know, I was into these poets when I was a kid. They have this idea of the looking glass, where a lot of these Victorian poets like Blake and Tennyson and Wordsworth, you know, they were always talking about like looking into yourself, right? And then reflecting that. And being a musician and a writer, a lot of what we do as songwriters is we try to get inside of that pain, right? Inside of the sadness, inside of the melancholy, and turn it into art. So we have to understand it. We have to deal with it. Where if somebody isn't, you know, been told that you got to be a man, you can't think about that you got to push it down, you never address it, you don't consider it, you feel weak if you talk about it. But the artist has a separate, different goal. It's like you actually need to access that to do your work, the work you do, to do the art you do. You have to think about it. You have to go into it really deep. And so it's an opportunity to be cathartic. But how do you get that to people who aren't creative, that need that kind of cathartic release, but they're not creative? But, you know, how do you get them to kind of use that artist creativity to help themselves?
That's a great question. I love that you brought that up. And going back to what you mentioned with, especially with men, hey, hold it in. You shouldn't talk about that. Hey, man up. All these different statements we've all heard to an extent. That doesn't help anyone because this guy's just boiling. He has all this pent up anger, aggression, sadness, depression. He's never lets it out. which if he can find an outlet. So I suggest, there's a few ways, but I always suggest that people write out, what are some things I can eliminate? That's one of the first things on a first session how to do with anybody is we make a list of things that we could eliminate. So an example could be, maybe Michelle wants to eliminate sodas and sugars. A lot of her sugar comes from her drinks, and she doesn't realize that she has 3 sweet teas a day and then a Coke at work. And then we add up the grams and we're like, you're pushing nearly 200 grams of sugar, and that's why you're feeling all these cravings. So that's like one example, is she wants to slowly eliminate those things. So I'm all about longevity, not the open your fridge and pantry, take a picture, and I'm going to tell you what to throw away.
It's got to be sustainable.
Most people will not last long doing that. You're not going to go extreme. Exactly. Sustainability, 100%. And another example for eliminate could be negative self-talk, where the person that is uncomfortable receiving a compliment, they normally try to flip it to something negative, or they kind of deflect it. So an example could be, hey, you're doing really well at work. Thanks for helping so-and-so. Oh yeah, you know, I'm not that good. Joey's much better than me. Instead of just saying thanks, they never say thank you to a compliment. They kind of deflect it, or they put themselves down. They downplay themselves, and they haven't realized that they do it so much in a social aspect at work, friendships, relationships, and their own relationship with themselves. And then they don't realize why they feel so down. But if they zoom out and write that down, hey, I want to eliminate all this negative self-talk. Like, I can't even say thank you when a loved one gives a genuine compliment and it's spilling into other areas of life. I see that a lot with relationships where they say, no, you look good, honey. Or, hey, you look good, boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband, whoever they are. And the person's like, no, you're lying. You're just saying that to make me feel better. And that's not even like what's supposed to happen in the moment. They're genuinely giving them a compliment, but because they don't see themselves the way they see them. So these are all examples where we slowly peel back the layers and say, what could I eliminate or get rid of or maybe replace that'll help me make progress faster? Is it food and nutrition related? Is it self-talk related? Is it I hit snooze 6 times every morning and then I'm stressed out because I'm late and I'm just getting pulled in all directions? Like, everybody can pinpoint, if they're honest and transparent, what could I eliminate or get rid of or just simply do less of? So I like to start from there before we add anything to the schedule or to the routine. So that would be my challenge for the listeners, is what could you get rid of or replace that's going to help you make much more progress? Because there's something that might not be physical or what you're consuming. It's probably what you're scrolling at on the phone. Do you wake up at 6 and you scroll for 30 minutes before you do anything? You have zero control of the first thing you're going to see on those apps. It might be negative, it might be positive, but control that morning, the first few minutes, and you'll be able to control the day much more.
I do find even with creative people, I run, you know, being a producer, what I tend to find is I always want to hear the song that the artist doesn't want to show me. Because what I usually find is the song that they don't want to show is the one I want to hear, because that actually is the one that has like the deepest picture of who they are. And people tend to, like, you know, I run into artists, they got hundreds of songs and they present what they think you want to hear. But I was like, I want to hear what you think nobody wants to hear, because that usually is very individual and is very different from what is out there. What 10 people tend to do is clone other people. They tend to copy other things. And when you find their original work is the one they're scared to show. And what I find is that's the same way people are with themselves. They kind of put these masks on, the layers on, and you don't really see who they really are because they keep on hiding it. And you try to get to the real person. That's the goal.
Exactly. 100%. I've always loved people that are fully authentic. One of my mentors, he always said, I'm not for everyone, neither are you. I'm not for everyone, neither are you. And when he first said that, it really made me think. And I'm like, hey, you know what? You're right. Because I'm former military. I haven't dropped an F-bomb here today, but normally I drop an F-bomb a lot. And it's always like just the adjective that goes along with the sentence. It's not in a derogatory way, but that's not for everyone. People don't like that. But other people, they're like, man, I like how open and blunt and honest you are. And they're like, the same guy online is the same guy in person. That's awesome. And then to zoom out, I'm sorry, I've just always been myself. But then you notice a lot of people, that, like you said, they play a character, whether it's in person or online, or they have different streaming platforms and the person is in a different version of themselves on all platforms. And the people are like, who is this? Like, you meet them at an event or a convention and they're like super awkward. And you're like, what? You're like a character on YouTube. Just, like, what? Who is this? So I just always recommend that everyone be their authentic self with no fear. Because honestly, there's no better freeing feeling than being yourself wholeheartedly without a fear of judgment. Because at the end of the day, nobody wants to be like him and her and like everyone else. They want to just be themselves and be like, can I just show up this way? But then they second guess themselves, as you mentioned. They have that second thought and then they try to copy others. But if you're teeter-tottering the line and you're tiptoeing the line, jump towards the line that aligns with who you are. And the right people, they'll come to you. If other people don't connect with you, you can thin the herd. They'll go
elsewhere. What do you think about, like, I hear with social media, man, with young people, there's all these, like, prototypes of, like, they push these images for young girls and boys, and they see these images that are not really real, or they're over-exaggerated, and then they think that's what they should be. And I've heard there's a lot of people, there's a lot of young women, there's a lot of young men who feel, okay, well, this is like this perfect vision of what I'm supposed to be, being pushed by like a professional model or some person who's out there as a personality. And then I think that should be the model that I should aspire to be instead of being uniquely who I am. And maybe I need to just be better, just physically more fit, but I don't have to be that model, but how much pressure do you get from people that if they come to you and they want to like mimic something they've seen on social media and you're like, oh, I don't know if that's a good idea.
That's a great question because it's very common. A lot of people have, I didn't coin it, but I always use the word comparisitis. So it's just the constant comparing to others and their lifestyle or their body, if it's a fitness standpoint, because of social media. So what I like to do is if somebody does have a physique goal, so let's say that there's a celebrity, they're like, hey, I really like how Michael B. Jordan looked in Creed. I want shoulders that are like this, chest is like this. And then I say, hey, that's a great example. Cool. Now we know what we're working with. That's like your ultimate physique, something along those lines. Perfect. So if they have something like that inspires them, that's a positive example. On the flip side, the most common example is this is unattainable. I know I want that, but I can't have it. Will I ever have it? Will your program even work? I don't know because nothing works. And then they start to like go on this tangent before we even started the conversation. And then it's like, wait a minute. I understand you like the way he or she looks, but let's put that away for a moment. What do you really want? And then they start to open up some, because if somebody is inspired by someone that's one, that's awesome. That's a motivating force. So growing up, I would watch Bruce Lee videos. I was in martial arts. Then I would love watching old Mike Tyson videos. Then I would watch Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilding videos. And then Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Yeah, totally different. All of these gentlemen have completely different physiques and body types, but I just love their mentality. I was like, I love that relentless mentality of just going all in, taking care of family, taking care of business. And I saw them as a motivational, inspirational light. But now people see things like that as less inspiration and they get hyper fixated on people will not exactly like me unless I look this way. I can't get my dream wife or dream husband or dream career if I don't look like this person. So there's a fine line between inspiration and like obsession with looking a certain way and placing their happiness on that end goal. That's what I really try to instill in people, is to fall in love with the person that you are along the journey. Don't place your happiness on the dollar amount, on the six pack, on the photo shoot, on the perfect song, whatever it is, don't place the happiness on that end goal. Fall in love with the person you become on the journey. And that's where the true happiness comes from. Because they're like, wow, I'm a great musician now, or I'm good at speaking, whatever it is. Like, those are moments where that person truly loves themselves, where they're not even worried about what they originally wanted. They'll still get it, but
yeah, I mean, it's like when you think about somebody, it's like, well, I want $1 million. What do you want with to do with that $1 million? Right. Or the, I knew a bunch of musicians when I was 16.
Yeah.
That because they couldn't play like Hendrix, or they couldn't play like Prince, or they couldn't play like Bootsy Collins, and they gave up. But I said, I was pointing out to them, like, well, they're bands like The Clash. They're bands that are like punk bands, and there's like guys that are hip hop that don't know how to play like that, but they can still do something. So the problem is, like, some people are just like all or nothing. Or you have to realize, you know, why do you do me? I do music because I love it. Whether or not I was going to make a hit wasn't the point. I like to play, and I like to be around people who play. And if it becomes a hit, that's fine. But I play because I love music. If you play because you want to be Prince, well, there's one Prince and he's not here, and you're probably not going to be him. You know, so do you do it because you love playing? Maybe you were inspired by him, but you're not going to be him. But you know, you could get close within your own capability to be your own self.
Exactly. And that's awesome. The part, you love what you do. And that right there is honestly one of the rarest things. Loving what somebody does and being truly passionate about it. Because how many people do we know, or we maybe used to be the person who hated their career, hated what they were studying in school, hated this, hated that, or they went down a path that mom, dad, grandma, professor, or Mr. Jimmy down the road said, you should go do this with your life. And then 2 years to 10 years later, they're like, why did I listen to him? Deep down, I wanted to go this path, but they had fear. So that's another thing I like to ask people. I was like, you're great on paper with the money and this, but are you fulfilled? I always challenge people to go down the path of the passion, as you mentioned, the love, and what would fulfill them.
Yeah, because a lot of times, you know, people think, you know, I grew up, when I went to college, was a bunch of guys that went into investment banking. Like almost all of them are, you know, they end up, I checked with my classmates, they weren't happy because, you know, they were kind of given this, like, you know, this idea that was going to make them super happy. And they just kept on pushing. Well, I might make my next $1 million, next $2 million, next $5 million. But then they never got happy. They keep on pushing it. And then they're still not happy. They get divorced. They're not happy. Got this, not happy. It's like that wasn't actually going to make you happy. It's like, what makes you happy? It's like feeling good about what you're doing. And if you're not feeling good about what you do every day, then you need to assess what you're doing. You know?
Oh yes. And it literally goes back to the fear. Many people are stuck on fear to go after that thing, pursue becoming a model, an actor, a doctor, whatever it is, because currently, somebody that's listening might be the black sheep of their family. I was definitely the black sheep. I wasn't the rebel. I was the quiet kid, but I just knew that I didn't think the same way that they thought. Not that I'm above any of them, but I just knew that I wanted to go my own path and I didn't have fear. So there's a phrase called delusional optimism. Delusional optimism. I've always gravitated towards people that are delusional optimists that have actually done things, not just like overly optimistic and don't take action and don't get anywhere in life, but the ones that were like, I believe in myself so much, I don't know how I'm going to make it happen, but I know God is going to give me the steps, resources will come, ideas will flood, opportunities will present themselves, and they just have so much trust in themselves. Those kind of people have always given me a rush, mm-hmm. No matter what industry they're in. It's amazing to see that because it's so rare. You can just see it in their eyes that they're like, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to become the best fashion designer. And people are like, oh, that's stupid. And they're like,
yeah.
Nope, he's going to make it. He has that look in his eye. And when you see that in somebody, it's,
yeah, because it just gives me a rush. A lot of times people are growing up and they've got these like truths that aren't really truth. They're beliefs. Like somebody, like their dad said, well, you're not going to amount to nothing. And then they felt that was the truth. And they just had, you know, a dad that was being mean to them. And it's like, okay, like then they're taking that from their inner child self all the way to whatever age they are, and they're still hearing their dad tell them they can't do nothing. So then they're the one that's not taking any praise and not thinking they can get anywhere. Exactly. And you know, they're down on themselves because they've been kind of, they're on that train until they can get to somebody to kind of analyze, like, was that truth, you know, is that really a belief and it's not true? And you were kind of like, you got to realize, you got to break through, you know, you got to go through that and get around it, get over it, push it down.
Oh yeah, exactly. Because I like to ask people, are your limiting beliefs really yours? Are your limiting beliefs really yours? Is it your dad? He placed that on you? Is it your mother? Is it somebody else? Is it a professor, a coach? You heard that, or somebody pushed it onto you, and then they started thinking, yeah, you know what? And they start to agree with those people or with their own negative voice. Sometimes from a spiritual, from a faith standpoint, it could just be the enemy whispering in the ear. I've always thought of an analogy of the devil or an entity latching onto someone's back and whispering in the ear, like, you're not enough. You're not going to do it. And then that voice might not even be a real person. It might have never came from family. It's just somebody or an entity or the devil trying to play mental tricks because he sees you're on the right path. And then it makes you second guess yourself. Maybe that's not even your voice. Maybe that's just you being tested. And if you stop listening to the enemy or whoever's voice that is, you start to really trust in yourself and whatever higher power you believe in. But those moments are pivotal for people where they're like, you know what? That's how my dad thinks. That's not how I'm going to think. Or that's not even my voice. Let me brush this out of my head real quick and get a workout in and get back to work. But definitely being able to identify, is this my limiting belief? And if it is, where did it come from? And then breaking it so it no longer holds you back.
Yeah, because a lot of what I do, you know, as an artist, you know, you have a lot of ideas. And a lot of times what happens is, like, you have a lot of artists, even if they're good, they have like limiting beliefs where they, you know, they got like hundreds of tracks that they never show anybody. And then it's like, cause they don't believe they're good enough. And it's up to like producers and, you know, people around them, their managers, they go back and they look at their stuff and they say, hey, this thing you're so scared of, that's like the best thing you've ever done. And then you got to bring that out. You got to give that to the world, but they're holding on to it because they're like, they got fear. And even people who you think wouldn't have that, they have it. And so it's just a matter of like the process of kind of going through that. Even people, cause they have different masks on and you don't even know, but I've run into a lot of artists that on stage, they look super confident. They look like they know, like they're totally there. They're off the stage, they're a total mess. They like don't have it together at all. and are very, very, very like scared of a lot of things. And I'm like, wow, it's like you wouldn't know it's the same person.
Yes. And I love that you mentioned that, because that's honestly one of my favorite things about what I do is seeing the people that crush it on stage. Or if their stage is as a father, as a parent, or as a business owner, whatever they do, if they crush it in that one field, pinpointing where else do you feel shy or fearful in. And once we can tackle and work on those areas, everything else starts to fall in place. Where as a coach, as a friend, it feels amazing seeing other people thrive in the areas that they used to struggle in. And you can just see it in their body language. I like to check my clients' social media, or if we worked together years ago, I see their holiday pictures. They have a real smile. They're in a new house. They're on their first vacation, their first date in 5 years, like whatever their experience is. And I'm just like, wow, I remember them months or years ago. We worked on those things together, or they worked on it by themselves and now they're thriving. And that's just what it's all about. And also just wanted to bounce off of what you said earlier, that music, you want to hear the song that they don't think you want to hear. I'm like that a lot with music as well, where I listen, my girlfriend always says, you listen to dark and sad music a lot. It's not that it's sad to me. It's just, I like to listen to music I can feel while I'm working out.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It doesn't even matter if I relate to it or not. It's just, I can feel it. And my friends are like, dude, why are you listening to this? And I'm like, that's the song that I feel. And they're like, it's not even the hit. It wasn't even on the billboard. I was like, I don't care about the billboard. Like, he put his heart into this. He's pouring his soul into this track. Yeah. Even if it's just a guitar riff or the guy's rapping or the lady singing, I'm like, this is giving me chills and pushing me. And it's interesting that you mentioned those things. So those are honestly my favorite type of songs. It's not the ones on the radio. Yeah. It's the ones on the album, song number 16 or 17 that everybody
skips. Well, it's like, I always tell people, like, if you read a book, do you read the cliff notes or do you actually read it? When it comes to a musician, if you look at their album, their single is not showing you who they are. It's all the other tracks on the album that show you who they are. Just like if you read a novelist, it's the same type of art. Most of these artists, those songs are part of a whole thing. And you're only hearing one of them. And then you don't see the full picture of who they are. If you read a book, you read the whole Stephen King, right? You read the whole thing. Then you get the real feel. But a lot of people are like cliff noting artists, musicians, particularly in this age compared to my, you know, childhood of the 70s. I listened to the whole Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life. You know, I listened to Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, the whole thing. Because I got the picture of the whole idea. And most of these songs were written as part of whole ideas. And so if you don't listen to the whole picture, you're missing a lot of it. So I think a lot of young people are missing the aspects of a lot of artists they think they know, and they really don't know them.
Yeah, for sure. I love that you see it in that aspect. And it's interesting how that connects to talking to people as well, where you see it in the artists, I see it with friends or clients, and it's all about peeling back the layers. The more that you can learn about this musician or this individual, the better the connection is, whether it's to their music, to them as a person, to them as a potential client or business partner, and just like that deep connection with people, which is one of the rarest things, to feel connected to others. And it's just awesome to see, because right now everything wants us all separated. Yeah. So if we can all come together through music, training, whatever it is, we can start to work together again, no matter what.
Like friendships and relationships, you know, you go on a date because you're going some dating app and people are pushing up like the best image of themselves. And then it's like, you know, pull the layers back and it's like, well, it's probably not going to be what they're showing on their app. When you actually start to, and if all you want to see is what you see on the app, you're not getting what real relationship is like, it's not always going to be a sunny day, right? It's not always going to be the perfect angle. And like, you have to take the good with the bad. Not that it's something codependent, but people aren't perfect. Human beings aren't perfect. So if you're looking for perfection and that's your concept, you're going to get disappointed.
Oh, yes. Every single time. You need that human interaction, that connection, where it can't just be the surface level Photoshop, and perfect lighting, eye contact. You need the real thing.
Yeah, the write-up of everything being like, oh, this is like, you know, I've always had like, you know, the best of times. Everybody, you know, a human being learns from their lessons learned. Things they've gone through, make them better people, make them understand how to deal with stuff. Somebody says they never had any issues, never had any problems. I'm like, really? You know, really?
Yeah. You're like, come on, what really happened?
Yeah, to kind of.
But also the best thing about being the individual who speaks up about those things, you start to feel freer. If you start to slowly, in the right interactions, we don't want to just dump our things on everyone, but if we have the right interaction and we just open up slowly, peel back the layers, the person, they can learn something about us and we feel open. We're like, wow, all I had to do is express it to somebody and it's a win-win for both. One person's like, wow, I never knew he went through that. And the other person's like, wow, I never knew this would feel this good to let it off my chest. So definitely having real and deep
conversations. Yeah, I think empathy is really important because we have kind of an age where people can't seem to not be able to put themselves in other people's shoes and have like these concepts that are very stereotypical identification of like, okay, this is what I think this person is on a very surface level interaction, and then not giving that person a chance or not having the empathy to understand culturally, socially, all kinds of reasons why this person might be where they are. And so I think a lot of it is this having a certain sense of humanity is to have the empathy for your fellow person and understand, not to the point that they're going to do something over you. Nobody wants to have somebody doing something over you. But the connection of the empathy is like there's an understanding, and it's not it's judgmental. And I think people need to kind of get out of their camps and get more into understanding.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you mentioned it earlier that people just want to be heard and understood. Every human, no matter their gender, their upbringing, their background, everyone just wants to be heard and understood. Is somebody listening and do they understand me? Because if we're not understood, we're like, oh, is nobody's going to listen? So why should I say anything anyway? So if we have those two, you start to open up and feel better. And it just feels good to be the active listener or being the person that's actually being listened to. You're like, wow. We both made each other feel good. So have more
and
of those.
The other idea that we'll get to now, now we're closing is that using pain as fuel. You know, as a songwriter, that's like our thing. Like most songwriters, we take pain more than joy. Most, I mean, I like funk and there's a lot of joy in funk. And so, I mean, I like to play bass and I can get into the funk. But a lot of songwriting comes from pain. And so I like to have your understanding of pain as fuel from your point of view.
Yes, for sure. Great question. So I see pain as, number one, identifying what was one of the biggest and deepest and darkest and most painful moments in said person's life. They can think of it for a second, and then they can say, how can I use this to my advantage? To some, they might be able to use it. If they have a competitive mentality like an athlete or military, it's easier for them. For others, it may not be easy. So with that person, I challenge them to learn their family history on both sides, no matter about their relationship with them. Maybe they hate that side of the family. Maybe they never talk to that side of the family. But if we zoom out and push pride and ego aside and say, what did great-grandpa go through? What did my mom and her mom go through in that side of the family? Once you can learn more of those stories, you see how much they all overcame and have overcome for you to be here right now. And it makes your current situation seem less stressful. We're not going to pretend it doesn't exist. We're not saying your pain isn't real. It does exist. But sometimes we have to zoom out and say, why did these people act this way? And slowly start to learn their background. Because like in my upbringing, I knew they weren't yelling at me. They were just had a rough upbringing and past that they just never fully worked on it. So I was like, they're yelling at somebody through me, not at me. So that helped me. Once I had that aha moment, I was like, huh, all those drunk nights, they weren't yelling at their son. They were just like screaming at their younger self or whoever did whatever in their past. And the next morning was like, hey, want to go have breakfast?
Yeah. Like,
what is happening? But from a fitness standpoint, I use that pain to fuel my workouts, but also that pain turn into a gift to connect with others because you can see when somebody else has empathy. Pain and try to help them in some type of way. So I would first, step one, have that empathy. So step one is how can I use this to my advantage? And then step two, learn your family history on both sides to see the darkest things that people went through to then maybe have some clarity of why those things happened to you. But then use that to help serve others. So one quote I want everybody to walk away with is become the man or woman that you would be proud of. Become the man or woman that you'd be proud of and give him or her to the world. Become the man or woman that you'd be proud of and give him or her to the world. So work on that side you need to work on, become better, and just present that best version to the world and help them where it's
That's an awesome thing to end on. And we want to let people know we've had your website up, fitwithderek.com. So that will be clickable when we're fully published. And if people click on that, what do they find there?
So they will see hundreds of clients, fitness, and also mindset life coaching. So I like to have pictures and videos of real people with real results so they can see different age, different demographics, and they can see their stories. Some overcame addictions, some bounced back after divorces. Some just wanted to beat that bully that was in their head and get in better shape. And some wanted to crush that social anxiety. So you'll see various stories, but at the end of the day, it's all about breaking those old patterns so they can thrive. And that's why I love showing videos because they can see it in the way that they express themselves. and there's no Photoshop in the pictures. Again, social media is a little sketchy, but I like showing real people real results. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm not for everyone, but if you like rawness in your face, black and white, just blunt energy that is there to help, then hey, we might be a good
fit.
That
sounds cool. And that's what we like to bring to our audience, you know, people, their authentic selves. That's what we try to bring, authentic, you know, individuals to the audience that are showing who they are. And that's why we like to do like these podcasts for like an hour, because I don't think you really know somebody in like 10 or 15 minutes. So that's why we go full length, and we actually hit it. And so thank you for being on the podcast tonight. Just hang back when we finish in the green room for the final recording. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on tonight. And thank you again for being on the Fam Electric Ghost podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you.